ADAC's phone company calls on the government to restore its subsidies.
We will have to consider some kind of reduction in this area just because we want to make sure that we are providing essential service to ADAC.
From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, July 30th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Alaska gets only a C+ for lobbying transparency.
Some basics are available, but it's not extremely citizen-friendly.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
The federal government is cutting subsidies to the telephone company that serves ADAC amid concerns about how the money is being spent. As KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports, that leaves the future of ADAC's phone service up in the air.
$15,000. That's about how much the Federal Communications Commission used to pay ADAC Telephone annually for each phone line in the community. In 2011, the total added up to $4.2 million worth of federal subsidies for less than 400 people. But those days are over.
We are, highly disappointed.
That's ADAC Telephone COO Andalia Weaver. She's disappointed because the FCC turned down her company's petition for an exemption from a new rule that caps subsidies at $250 a month or $3,000 a year per phone line. For most companies, meeting the cap isn't a problem. No other company in Alaska has applied for a waiver, according to the FCC. But Weaver says for ADAC Telephone, it's meant laying off half the staff.
No matter how much we cut out, we can't get to the 250 cap, and they know this.
The FCC disagrees. According to the agency, the problem isn't that they're asking for too much. It's that the company is cutting in the wrong places. The first expense the FCC takes issue with is compensation of the company's executives, Weaver, the COO, and CEO Larry Mays. In a document rejecting the company's petition, the FCC calls the salaries disproportionate, noting that they're, quote, high by almost any metric. The figures are redacted from the document, and Weaver declined to provide them. But public records show that in 2011, Mays was paid $237,000. That puts him about $100,000 above the median executive salary in Alaska. But Weaver defends the compensation, saying it's commensurate with the amount of work required. She also says if cutting executive salaries is what it takes to get the FCC to restore the subsidies, then that's what they'll do.
We understand that the next go around that we will have to consider some kind of reduction in this area just because we want to make sure that we are providing essential service to ADAC.
Taking a pay cut may not be enough, though. The FCC has other problems with the company's $1.2 million annual budget. They call the cost of running ADAC Telephone's retail store excessive and unreasonable, and question why the company needs to maintain a 26-foot fishing boat in ADAC. In response, ADAC Telephone has shut down the retail store effective immediately. But Weaver says getting rid of the other assets is more complicated.
Well, we would have to ask RUS because we were allowed to purchase those items through the Rural Utility Services loan.
That's a federal loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Weaver says they borrowed $6 million in 2005 and still owe most of that, $4.7 million. If the FCC doesn't restore their subsidies, Weaver says ADAC Telephone will file for bankruptcy by the end of the year and default on their debt.
Is that something that the taxpayers want to assume?
According to the FCC, yes. They note that eating the cost of the loan is more than offset by not paying out huge subsidies to ADAC Telephone. And as far as continued telephone service goes, the FCC isn't worried. They write that GCI has promised, quote, ADAC Island will not go dark. GCI didn't respond to a request for more details about how they would make that happen within the $250 cap, but Weaver says it's pretty clear.
GCI is basically saying once we file bankruptcy that they will purchase our assets on pennies on the dollar to provide service.
But Weaver says that's a worst-case scenario. ADAC Telephone has 6 more months to cut costs and put in another petition to exempt them from the new limits on subsidies. If they can reduce their expenses far enough, the FCC might reconsider. But no matter what the government decides, the days of $15,000 telephone lines are over. In Alaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
If you want to find out just how much money different interest groups spend lobbying the state legislature, you have two options. You can request specific filings from the Alaska Public Offices Commission during regular business hours, or you can wait until the end of the year for them to release their annual spending document. Both take patience of one kind or another, as APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez learned when she set out to examine the effect money has on state politics.
When it comes to lobbying and transparency, Alaska gets a C grade.
It means that some basics are available, but that it's not extremely citizen-friendly.
Gordon Witkin works for the Center for Public Integrity, and his organization has produced corruption report cards for every state in the country. One thing they examined was just how out in the open lobbying was. As far as disclosure laws are concerned, Alaska actually does better than most states. Lobbyists are required to register and file monthly reports. The companies that hire them also have to check in with the Alaska Public Offices Commission, or APOC, every quarter. But if the state were only graded on how well it gets that information out to the public, it would be failing.
In practice, lobbying disclosure documents are accessible to the public online in a meaningful and accessible manner. We gave Alaska a 50 out of 100 on that. Perhaps on that last question, Alaska should have gotten even a lower score.
I would use more colorful words than meaningful and accessible to describe my own experience trying to get the information. I had a couple of simple questions in mind. How much money was spent lobbying this session, and who spent the most? Getting the answers took multiple phone calls, multiple emails, and two office visits. When it comes to campaign finance, APOC posts every report filed. That's not the case with lobbying. Not a single report is online or even accessible from APOC's public computers. A staff member has to go in, format everything you want, and then print it out or email it to you. That's a huge effort when you're trying to make sense of hundreds of reports. Paul Dauphiné is APOC's executive director, and he actually agrees with the Center for Public Integrity's assessment. He says part of the problem is their system hasn't had a facelift since it was introduced, and that a lot of its value has been as a guinea pig for their other electronic reporting systems.
That was the first electronic system APOC had. So it meant much of what we learned from that system went into the candidate system.
On top of the infrastructure problem, there are also policy reasons there isn't much lobbying data out there. Statute instructs APOC to produce an annual summary of how much companies are spending, so they don't do anything more than that. Also, any reports APOC does release, they're in PDF format to keep people from altering the data. Kathy Keeley works for the Sunlight Foundation, a DC-based good government outfit, and she explains why that's a problem.
That's the worst kind of a thing, because it's, you know, it's effectively a picture of data, not data, and it means that you have to go through torturous methods to try to get that those numbers, names and numbers, all that information into a form where you can work with it, and so it's kind of like a non-disclosure disclosure.
So, what would an ideal system for putting out this information look like? Keeley says the state should not only make its data available online,
but available in a format that allows people to mash it up with other data sets. In other words, to connect the dots in ways that make patterns of influence transparent to voters.
Dauphiné says APOC is now looking at just how to do that, and that they're at the earliest stages of a revamp.
We, people at APOC, work with this stuff every day, and we have our own shorthand, and we think about it one way, but that is not even close to the way the general public's going to think about it, and we have to get outside of our own head. Oh, it's easy. We just go to lobbyist or employer, and we do this and we do that, but you don't do it every day.
And Dauphiné stresses that he really would like for citizens to be able to regularly check out all the information APOC collects.
After all, it is the public's data, and we do want them to use it.
It's just a question of how long it'll take. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
In the meantime, if you do want to see how much money was spent lobbying the legislature this year, go to our website, alaskapublic.org. There you will find an interactive database compiled based on APOC's data. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, professional bluegrass musicians make an impromptu visit to Akiak.
It's kind of like a real big honor to have some talent come here and share their skills.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
President Barack Obama is laying out a plan to simplify and lower corporate tax rates. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, it's getting mixed reaction from Alaska's senators.
Obama is offering an olive branch to Republicans, reducing the corporate tax rate from 35% to 28%. It would be even lower for manufacturing companies.
I don't want to go through the same old arguments where I propose an idea and the Republicans just say no because it's my idea.
The president aims to collect money from companies to bring foreign earnings back to the country. That one-time fee would pay for increased spending on infrastructure and high-tech job training. Get used to the term grand bargain. When Congress returns to Washington in September, it will need to vote to keep the government afloat. And there will be tons of talk of a grand bargain, an agreement to corral the deficit and control the debt. The president is framing his new idea as a grand bargain for the middle class. But to many legislators, tax rates are just one piece of a grand bargain.
We need to look at tax reform from a more holistic perspective.
Senator Lisa Murkowski says Congress needs to address personal rates as well. And any grand bargain needs to tackle government spending. Sequestration and higher tax rates on upper-income earners have reduced the growth of the deficit. But Murkowski says Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security remain untouched.
It's been kind of radio silence when it comes to the mandatory spending side. That is part of the equation as well.
Senator Mark Begich says he's introduced a revenue-neutral tax reform bill, meaning it won't add to the deficit. That bill is co-sponsored by Democrat Ron Wyden, who could be the next chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and Indiana Republican Dan Coats. Begich says he's lukewarm on the president's plan. He hasn't seen too many details yet.
If it's just the C corporations, then you're really not helping the bulk of this economy, which is driving the growth in our small economy right now, which is small business. And that's what I want to focus on. So I prefer to label it business tax relief, not corporate tax relief.
Meaning he'd like to see a restructuring of the tax code for limited liability corporations and S corporations. It's unclear how much the new proposals would cost the federal government. The price tag will surely be a sticking point in negotiations. And many in Congress say even though a grand bargain with entitlement spending reforms paired with personal and corporate tax rewrites is tantalizing, it will take time. More time than Congress has. It will be in session for only 9 legislative days until the end of the fiscal year. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The Anchorage Economic Development Corporation hosted Anchorage's first ever Mini Maker Fair at the Lusac Library on Saturday. The Maker Fair is a gathering of crafters, engineers, and tinkerers launched in California in 2006 and now taking place in cities across the world. The AEDC hopes the fair will help boost innovation and industry across Alaska. APRN's Sarah Bernard reports.
A pulse engine is an engine with no moving parts, built entirely from the physical principle of thermodynamics, if I understand it correctly.
Homemade engines, robots that toss frisbees, and sculptures that shoot flames are some of the more colorful displays at Anchorage's first Mini Maker Fair. Anchorage Economic Development Corporation Vice President John Bittner helped spearhead the event, which may be a little hard to define for the uninitiated.
It's not a science fair. It's not a farmer's market. It's a showcase for all the amazing, innovative, and creative things that people do in their spare time that they're so good at and want to share with the community.
Things like an Eiffel Tower made of cardboard or an interactive instrument called a slapophone. This weekend's Maker Fair also marked the launch of Alaska Entrepreneurship Week, a statewide event put on by AEDC that runs through August 4th. Bittner says it's all part of the organization's effort to reach Alaska's entrepreneurs and innovators.
What we found was a lot of people were doing amazing things, but they were sort of doing them by themselves. They didn't know that other people were also working on really interesting projects. And so what we realized was Anchorage and Alaska don't have an entrepreneur problem. We have a community problem. And so we set out to really create a startup community through events like this and the Alaska Hackathon and other such events during Entrepreneurship Week.
The third Alaska Hackathon takes place on August 3rd and 4th at a new collaborative art space called Anchorage Community Works. It brings together computer programmers and web developers to work on data projects for nonprofit and government agencies. Bittner says he hopes events like the Maker Faire and the Hackathon will help grow a budding technology industry in Anchorage and beyond.
You know, we thought that it would be almost impossible to do tech industry and manufacturing here in Alaska. I mean, that's sort of the traditional wisdom. But realistically, these people are out there doing it every day. I mean, the hackathons have been wildly successful. 30, 40, 50 coders come out all the time. It's all doable. It's just we have to recognize what's going on in our community and the potential.
Anchorage Maker Faire, everybody. Holy moly, look at that.
The fair's dozen presenters included Justin Renfro, a business development manager for Kiva Zip, a new project at Kiva, a micro-lending site that helps individual lenders connect with entrepreneurs. Kiva Zip recently partnered with AEDC and several other groups in Alaska to help find and fund startups across the state. Renfro says Alaska is primed to get this kind of thing going.
Alaska has more lenders per capita on Kiva than any other state in the entire country. So it's clearly a place where there's a strong community, there's a lot of entrepreneurship, there's a huge need for a program like Kiva Zip to help all of these entrepreneurs and small business owners grow and start, and we want to just foster that.
Here we go.
Other events during Alaska Entrepreneurship Week include a programming workshop and several opportunities for entrepreneurs to pitch their ideas to investors. In Anchorage, I'm Sarah Bernard.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly will maintain amicus status in a drawn-out suit challenging the Alaska Redistricting Board voter maps. The panel voted on Thursday to file a brief in support of plaintiffs George Riley of Esther and Ron Dearborn of Goldstream Valley. The men's latest motion is in the case challenges Fairbanks House and Senate districts they claim violate constitutional standards. Borough Assistant Attorney Jill Dolan outlined possible issues with the board's Fairbanks alignments.
Districts that ignore political subdivision boundaries, that ignore communities of interest, or any other discriminatory intent, if you have evidence of regional partisanship, things like that, then the question will become, you know, well, what's the board's valid non-discriminatory justification for that?
Riley and Dearborn's latest motion contests districts outlined in an updated plan filed by the Redistricting Board earlier this month. It also includes alleged problems with Matsu and Kenai voter districts.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. How do you get men to wear a life jacket when the fact is that 90% of those who die in boating accidents in Alaska are men? Well, most men won't listen to this message, but they might listen to you. So have them pledge to wear a life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. That's pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back home. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
The search for Wallace Dunn, 81 years of age, of Anchorage, has been expanded north after a tip indicated that he may have been near the Montana Creek campground on July 13th. According to his daughter, Kim Dunn, Dunn is a retired physician who was last positively identified after a game at the tennis club he attended on July 12th. Kim says that Dunn's truck was found near a family cabin in Big Lake and that what happened after he left his vehicle is a mystery. Kim says that while the Montana Creek sighting has not been confirmed, it is the best lead that state troopers have received. Posters show a picture of Dunn, who is described as 5'7" and 165 pounds. But Kim says the clothing in the picture may not necessarily match what he was wearing when he went missing.
We're kind of guessing at what he might have been wearing, but he usually wore a hat because he was bald. And so he wore a hat to cover his, you know, protect himself from the sun. And the last hat he was wearing was brimmed all the way around and was black. And typically when he was going out to the cabin, he was wearing something like a dark sweatshirt and old jeans and black boots. So he doesn't look exactly like the person in the poster. He's more of a, you know, rugged clothes that would take the outdoors. So that's what we think he might be wearing.
Kim Dunn says her father lives independently and is largely in good health, but does have a tentative step and sometimes has memory difficulty. The state has turned down a petition that would have designated some state lands within the Chewitna River watershed as unsuitable for coal mining. Alaska Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan on Friday reaffirmed his decision to reject the petition filed by the Trustees for Alaska on behalf of the Chewitna Citizens Coalition and Cook Inlet Keeper. Mine opponents say the Chewitna River and its tributaries are salmon streams and will be harmed by coal mining. Beluga resident Judy Heilman is the president of the Chewitna Citizens Coalition.
You know, you just hope and pray that they'll do what's right. I just don't understand how Governor Parnell and the DNR can refuse to protect Alaska's wild salmon. You know, that's what our state is all about, is our resources, and that is one of our renewable resources. So, you know, they should put their foot forward to try to help out here. We don't understand why they can do that.
The petition requested buffers around the Chewitna and its salmon streams. DNR says the decision is the result of a thorough review of new materials submitted by the petitioners, existing records, and state and federal laws. The decision does not allow a mining project to go forward, but it does affirm the earlier decision not to ban all surface coal mining before conducting a full environmental review. The decision comes as Pac Rim, the developer of the proposed coal project, is filing for a Clean Water Act permit with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Trustees for Alaska's Valerie Brown says environmental attorneys are examining the petition and there may be further legal action. She says there is no evidence that a project on the scale of the proposed Chewitna coal mine can result in reclaiming a salmon stream. The Kuskokwim village of Akiak got a special treat last week when their community hall became an official venue for the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival. The festival came to Akiak in the form of two world-renowned recording artists. As KYUK's Shane Iverson reports, the sound they brought will likely have a lasting impact on the village.
At the community hall in Akiak, things look pretty typical. Roy Williams and his local Broken Record Band are tuning up. But today, they've just been joined by two new members.
What you want?
Well, really, my interest is that you play what you want.
Okay.
See if we can follow you.
Okay.
Just as long as you tell us what key, you know? Okay.
The man with the drawl, that's Raymond McLean. And that's Mike Stevens in the background.
Okay. And we'll do it both ways. And then we'll follow your lead too, okay?
Okay.
A crowd of about 80 villagers shows up to see the two musicians play with their village fiddle band, and it was all smiles as they got started. McLean is the one you can hear plucking away on the banjo while Stevens blows harmonica. The group plays just a few songs when Steven leaves the band to lead an impromptu music lesson in the laundry room.
You guys, you won't believe how easy it is to play this. And all I have to do is breathe. And when you breathe, it makes music. You can say words or anything. Watch, I'll blow out. Now I'll breathe in. It's that easy to play. You want to try it?
At least a dozen kids start the session and dozens more stream through. Each of them receives a brand new harmonica from Stevens, who's handing them out.
Blow out, loud as you can.
I'll spare you most of the sound, but kids are blowing, breathing, huffing, talking, and even barking into their new instruments. For Stevens, a heavily decorated musician who has six times in a row received the award as Canada's Best Bluegrass Performer, this right here is what it's all about.
What I like about the harmonica is the fact that you can instantly make a sound that sounds like a feeling. You know what I mean? Like you can make a harmonica cry, or you can, and it sounds like that. So when you're showing kids that, they instantly get it and they can play things that they feel.
This whole performance was whipped up in just a matter of days. It's actually a part of the Fairbanks Summer Art Festival, an event now in its 30th year. But this year, organizers wanted to expand the series outside of Fairbanks. They reached out to the Kuskokwim campus for help coordinating a Bethel event. But Stevens insisted they take the show on the river, and that's how they ended up in Akiak.
I just really felt that it is something special.
When village leader Mike Williams Sr. got the call, he jumped at the opportunity to help.
I think we can produce more artists in the villages so they can, you know, there's more enough talent to make this music something special for them and to even become a professional musician.
That's young Sam Lake of Akiak, hanging outside the hall on a four-wheeler and doing what he calls the Rocky Balboa thingy.
I just figured it out when I was on our four-wheel.
The traveling musicians are also a treat for Broken Record band leader Roy Williams.
Oh, it's really nice to have some people coming from, especially people that can play all kinds. It's kind of like a real big honor to have some talent come here and share their skills. I wish it was a little bit more acoustically set up, but it's kind of hard to do that in the small village, you know.
String specialist Raymond McLean knows. He's traveled much of the world and Alaska over the decades playing his banjos and fiddles. He says he's not here to put on the performance of his life. In fact, for him, that's not even what music is really about.
My father always said, and I think it's true, that the point was to play from your heart and to try to communicate with somebody else, and that's what it's for.
And though this musical treat feels like a one-time thing, Stephen says he hopes to return to check on Lake and the other people that have been moved by his art.
You don't come here once and do this, that you come back and you come back and you come back and you try and help build something here that will sustain music and help them find their own voice and play their own music.
And as the sound of harmonicas spread through the village, it's easy to imagine at least a few students finding their way to that music. Or, at the very least, as Roy Williams points out, the event was
very, very, very good, very good, excellent, super, we had fun.
Reporting from the Fairbanks Summer Art Festival in Akiak, I'm Shane Iverson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, and Shane Iverson in Akiak. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Sarah Bernard from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Providence Imaging Center with Doctors Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology. PROVImaging.com.
And by
Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.